Welcome. This is Dr. Nalini Chilko. Welcome to our live Grand Rounds call for the Foundations of Integrative Oncology course. This call will last approximately 1 hour, hour and 15 minutes. We'll start with a clinical pearl and then move into case studies and questions. Also have a couple of articles and resources to share with you. Everyone is muted, and if you want to speak, you just press *7 between each section of the call. I'll pause and leave time for people to contribute or ask questions or clarify. So let's get started, and just remember to press *7 if you want to speak. One of the things I wanted to be sure to remember to tell you is I've developed a new resource, and we'll be posting that probably in the next couple of weeks. I get a lot of questions about which herbs can and cannot be taken concurrently with chemotherapy, and which herbs to be concerned about drug interactions or changes in clotting functions. So I've made a nice handout cheat sheet for all of you, and we'll let you know when that is live. Now, the clinical pearl that I have chosen to talk about this month is cancer-related cognitive impairment, and I want to just specifically talk about selected nutraceuticals and botanicals that you can use, because I think it's really important to understand what crosses the blood-brain barrier, and so I want to give you a little materia medica of that. Just as a reminder that we are not only concerned about chemotherapy or treatment-induced cognitive impairment, but also cancer-related cognitive impairment. Some patients at the time of diagnosis already are experiencing cognitive changes because of the inflammatory nature of cancers and their the ability of inflammatory cytokines to cross the blood-brain barrier. And in the cancer physiology, you have an upregulation of expression of matrix metalloproteinases, and these are enzymes that break down barriers and break down cell adhesion. And these enzymes allow a breach not only of the blood-brain barrier, but also that's how metastasis can happen, because the cells can break apart and become freed, and those that are adapted to traveling in the bloodstream can then do so. So it's this high amount of metallomatrix proteinases that is doing this damage. So that's part of the tumor environment. So it's not only treatment, but it's also the disease itself. And today we also have ramped up cytokines from the immunotherapies, which are intentionally inflammatory. So we want to be aware that the blood-brain barrier needs protection as well. And we look at a definition of this as a neuropsychological syndrome that is induced by therapeutic agents or by the physiology of cancer. And the cognitive decline that we're looking at is can be anything from a mild inability to perform routine tasks to very serious memory, attention, and executive function changes. And, you know, many patients' lives are quite disrupted. One of the reasons that I choose to talk about this, and this is actually one of my main interests, is how to protect and repair the brain of cancer patients and cancer survivors, is because in breast cancer patients, that's one of the most studied groups in terms of the impact of cognitive impairment, largely due to the fact, I think, that women express more what's going on with them. And also there's a handful of researchers who just really took this group of breast cancer patients and studied them over a number of years. So this is one study, and it really defines the impact. States 18 to 78% of breast cancer patients report dyscognition soon after initiating chemotherapy treatment. Symptoms have been reported to persist for months to years in 35% of patients who are in disease-free remission. they may suffer from cognitive decline from 5 to 10 years after going into remission, and some up to 20 years. And so the brain has changed. The brain has changed both structurally and functionally. And oncologists don't do anything about this, but we have the toolbox for it. So that's really why I want to make sure you know what your materia medica is. And remember also that we have, because of the age demographic of cancer patients, we have a group of patients who already may have cognitive changes just because of their age demographic. And so you want to get a sense of what someone's baseline cognitive functioning and cognitive reserve is at the beginning. And also, if you know anything about their SNPs, patients with COMT SNPs and also APOE4 SNPs will be more vulnerable to cognitive changes in the face of inflammation and increased oxidative stress of all types, not just cancer-related. So because this is such a long-term persistent adverse effect, it often falls into our hands as well. So I want to go into a handful of things that you can use or are already using and should understand that there's a positive impact on cognitive function. And one of those is actually vitamin D. And remember, our goal for serum 25OH vitamin D is somewhere between 55 and 80. The most recent research shows around 75 is the optimal. And so that's my goal in that higher ballpark. So there's a study that showed that participants who are moderately deficient in vitamin D have a 53% increased risk of developing dementia of any kind and an increased risk of 125% in those who were severely deficient in vitamin D. And this was a study actually on Alzheimer's disease and dementia. But this is true in the cancer setting as well. And for those of you that are new to the call, we have actually a new community member, Dr. Jacqueline Tolentino, who's here in Los Angeles. This is her first call. So Jacqueline, you should have gotten in your email a copy of the slides and also a copy of the case study. And if you didn't, you'll be able to download it after the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome, my dear. And welcome to our community. All right. So acetylcholine is another well-studied nutraceutical. It's essentially a synthetic choline donor. You know, think about lecithin and phosphatidylcholine as nutrients that we already use as choline donors. This is a synthetic one that you find in a lot of supplements, but it's really well studied in humans. And I have a couple of references for you on that. But it is very protective to the neuron, and it also potentiates neuroplasticity. And it, as a choline source, it is a source of the building block for acetylcholine. It will also increase brain metabolism, and it is very neuroprotective during hypoxia and ischemia, which that's more related to a stroke. But remember, our population of patients, 40% of all cancer patients have a thromboembolic event. And I just had a very young patient have a stroke as a result of his advanced cancer, because nobody's watching his coagulation factors. So we want to be mindful of that as well. Also, acetylcholine will increase SIRT1, and that is a mitochondria. It's found in the cytoplasm and also functions in the mitochondria and in the nucleus. There's several different types of sirtuin, but this is part of preserving mitochondrial function and normal cell function. And so remember, any cells that have high rates of metabolism are always more vulnerable. And so that's why the neuron is vulnerable. That's why the brain is vulnerable. So there's another study I have, and this study was done at 250 milligrams a day. I use 250 to 1,000 milligrams twice a day in some patients who are very, very compromised. But you'll see improvements in immediate and delayed recall of words, and also ameliorating short-term and long-term memory and attention and perceptual issues. It ameliorates behavioral and emotional control, improves verbal memory, and especially noteworthy, you know, more compromised older individuals. You'll see it more. That's from a study, a review study of acetylcholine and cognitive impairment and its pharmacologic effects. And that's from 2015. So I use acetylcholine, not usually by itself, but in a combination supplement. And there's a really wonderful supplement that was developed by Dr. Lise Alschuler, who is a naturopathic oncologist and a breast cancer survivor herself. And she developed a small line of products for integrative therapeutics called the ProThriver products. And I think there's just four of them. And one of them is called ProThriver Brain, and it contains acetylcholine and a couple of other nutrients that I'm going to talk about in this lecture. So I really like that product. That's usually what I use, two caps twice a day. Now, acetyl L-carnitine, I use quite a lot, and this not only protects neurons peripherally and centrally, but also repairs. So quite often by the time the patient gets to us, they've already had damage. You know, I like to build a treatment plan that reduces the adverse effects and protects healthy tissues and healthy function. And so our patients can have less adverse effects altogether and then a better quality of life, do better psychologically. But a lot of the times, by the time the patient walks in our door, they already have something they're complaining of. They may have already had neuropathy or cognitive decline. So I'll use acetyl L-carnitine when we know there's been neurodegeneration for its regenerative properties. And I use about 2 or 3 grams a day. And you can get this in powder. So sometimes I'll just put it in a shake. It's got a strong taste. Some people don't like it. It does come in capsules as well. And there are several studies that I've listed here for you in the slides. One in particular studied patients on taxotierensis platin, and that's a very common cocktail in many, many cancers, and breast cancer in particular. And so you will have a lot of patients on a highly oxidative therapies that can damage the neurons. And so we get an improvement in neuronal survival, you know, less neuronal death. We get restoration and repair of neurons and of neurotrophic factors. And we also get glial cell-derived neurotrophic factor in particular. And the glial cells are really protective in the brain. And so we want to make sure that they also are supported. So I use acetyl L-carnitine quite a lot. I have another study here. It was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial of humans, 61 people with cognitive decline, and they used 2 grams of acetyl L-carnitine twice daily. So that's 4 grams a day. And this study showed that 88% of the patients that received the acetyl L-carnitine versus 72% of the patients who had placebo showed significant improvement in their EEGs, cognitive deficits, and also a reduction of ammonia, which is cytotoxic and neurotoxic. And that was published in 2011, actually, in Metabolic Brain Disease Journal. So I always just put the acetyl L-carnitine in at the beginning. Now, there are some studies on curcumin and brain health, and a lot of these studies have been done in the Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease setting, which are neuroinflammatory syndromes. And so you could think of chemo brain, cancer brain as a neuroinflammatory, high oxidative stress environment in the brain. And so curcumin does cross the blood-brain barrier. And so we're using this anyway, but you know that it's very restorative and protective to the brain. It will support the regeneration of axons and of a brain-derived neurotrophic factor. We know it to be an anti-inflammatory. It is definitely a neuro-anti-inflammatory. And it also has been linked to mood dysregulation as well as changes in cognitive function. And in the Alzheimer's setting, it's been shown to stimulate the clearance of beta amyloid plaques. And this is from a study in genetic molecular research in 2014. And then I have a really, really wonderful study and a great slide for you. This paper, which is titled Clearing the Fog, a Review of the Effects of Dietary Omega-3 Fatty Acids and Added Sugars on Chemotherapy-Induced Cognitive Deficits. And so they used 1.8 grams of omega-3 fatty acids. That's kind of 2 grams a day. It's kind of my bottom dose for healthy people. And I'll go up to 4 to 6 grams a day with many of my patients. 4 grams a day is more my typical dose. And what this study showed, the impact of hyperglycemia on cognitive and neuronal function, as well as the positive effects of adding omega-3 fatty acids on neuronal function. And what they found was that the omega-3 fatty acids were neuroprotective and functionally protective of cognitive function. And it's the hippocampus where most of the functional and structural changes can be seen on a scan, but also the prefrontal lobe is affected. That's where the executive function is. But all that memory stuff is going on in the hippocampus, and brain scans show a atrophy of the and a loss of the mass of the hippocampus with patients that complain of cognitive changes due to cancer treatments. And also you'll see changes in the gray matter and the white matter in these patients. So it's not just functional, it's actually structural changes, anatomical changes that are happening. So you can see the damage, it's significant. So there's hippocampal neurogenesis in the presence of higher dosing of the omega-3 fatty acids. So that's significant. When the patient has hyperglycemia and insulin resistance, then you have more neuroinflammation, more mitochondrial dysfunction, more oxidative stress, and more activation of the microglia. And so you just have this hot soup of inflammation and high oxidative stress, which is what damages the neurons. And so we have then more neuronal apoptosis and nerve death. So this is a great paper, and it really shows the impact of controlling blood sugar and insulin as well as adding omega-3 fatty acids. So I really like this paper a lot. And then you can see how molecules from nature are multitaskers and affect multiple pathways and multiple functions as well. Then we want to take a look at what are the nutraceuticals and botanicals that can activate CERT1, because we get some nuclear impact on the cells in the hippocampus, and therefore gene expression is changed. And so these are all botanicals and phytochemicals that cross the blood-brain barrier and can impact the cells in the brain. So we mentioned curcumin, resveratrol crosses the blood-brain barrier, berberine crosses the blood-brain barrier. We just talked about acetylcholine, and then melatonin crosses the blood-brain barrier. When you take it exogenously, it's of course produced there. But it also, I have some other studies from a larger lecture that show that melatonin is very protective to the blood-brain barrier, and astragalus is also protective to the blood-brain barrier. Both of those things will reduce the matrix metalloproteinases and promote repair. And so we're using all of these things in our protocols already, but you might think in a patient with cognitive vulnerability or actual cognitive decline to increase the doses of the things you know across the blood-brain barrier. And so I always do that, always do that. And, you know, you will get impact on the peripheral nerves if the patient also is suffering from peripheral neuropathy, which is a side effect of Taxotere and of cisplatin. All the platinum drugs create a lot of neuropathy and brain changes. The platinum drugs also damage the nephron. And so there are many patients who've had a lot of platinum drug therapy of long-term kidney damage because of that. So everything we can do to protect these very delicate cells and important vital cells is very important. I have a study on another double-blind placebo-controlled study on resveratrol regulating neuroinflammation. And that study, they used 1,000 milligrams twice a day for 52 weeks. So that's a decent dose of resveratrol. And it showed that it decreased the matrix metalloproteinase in the cerebrospinal fluid and modulated neuroinflammation and induced adaptive immunity and activated SIRT1. So it's a great study. I have that reference in here for you. And there's another resveratrol study where they only used 75 milligrams twice a day, so just 150 milligrams a day. And this was a 14-week randomized placebo-controlled trial. And this was looking at the impacts of resveratrol on cognitive function and cognitive performance, mood, and blood flow in the brain. And that was a 2017 study. So you have a nice little human study there. And then lion's mane is the primary Asian mushroom that is used for the brain. Although I have to say that we could put Ganoderma reishi mushroom in this category as well. But the most studied in the context of cognitive changes is lion's mane mushroom, which is Hericium erinaceus. And in Japan, it's called Yamabushijitake. And it's a really wonderful polysaccharide rich brain food, essentially, really enhances the cognitive function. And it's because it is rich in beta glucans and polysaccharides, it also impacts immune function as well. And studies have shown that it strengthens memory and concentration, enhances cognition, and stimulates nerve growth factor. And by the way, it's edible, and so you can actually put it in soup and foods as well, if you get the dried mushroom or the powder. And it also has been shown to promote and accelerate myelination. So that's important. You might think of other neurodegenerative demyelinating syndromes like multiple sclerosis. You could think of using this as part of a support plan for a patient like that. So I've given you a couple studies on lion's mane. And then one Ayurvedic herb that I think is very, very important is bacopa. This is Brahmi in the Ayurvedic. We could include gota kola also, Centella asiatica, but I couldn't find any cancer chemo-related studies for that, although it's widely used and widely used in for cognitive changes in memory and brain aging. But and it's widely used in combination with bacopa, but I just couldn't find any studies, so I didn't include it for that reason. But I have a couple of studies on bacopa showing improved retention of new information, so short-term memory, and evidence of its antioxidant effect on the hippocampus. And so that's really important. There was a 12-week study that I have a reference for you for, on the consumption of bacopa impacting attention, cognitive processing, working memory, and showing improved cholinergic functions. So this is a little handful of reliable neuro support and repair and protection that you can use and think about using a therapeutic dose. Think about also repairing the blood-brain barrier. Remember that when there is systemic inflammation, that flood of cytokines can also get into the brain, and that's where a lot of the cytokines come from. They flood the brain because of the breach in the blood-brain barrier. So I will stop there and I will open it up to questions or comments. Oh, we have people from all over the world on this call. This is really fantastic.
Hey, this is Stacey DeAndre.
Hello, Stacey. Oh, you're the expert here. So Stacey is a neuro-oncologist.
Yes. So I actually just got funding to study ashwagandha in this
study. Fabulous.
Yeah. So ashwagandha has been looked at in people with mild cognitive decline and in other neuroinflammatory disorders. And so there's been a number of trials, and not necessarily in cancer. They use mostly 500 BID. And there was one study in cancer patients where they pushed the dose up higher, and patients on chemotherapy had a decrease in fatigue. So that was a positive thing. But they didn't really study neurocognitive changes. So we just got funding and got peer encapsulations to give us a product. And so we're going to kick off a study in September in patients who report cognitive changes after their first cycle. So we want to get them really early.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a double-blind randomized trial. So
what dose are you using?
500 BID. I just use the dose. We use the same dose that was used in the cognitive decline.
Yeah, I think you'd get bigger impact if you doubled that dose, and there's no downside.
Probably.
Yeah. You already said what you were going to do. Yeah.
Other than that's what they're going to they're going to give me.
Yeah. Well, great.
That's great. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
And I do use a lot of lion's mane in the brain tumor patients. I love lion's mane.
Yeah. Thank you. So I just want to say this is by no means an exhaustive materia medica. I have a 2-hour lecture that I do on cognitive changes associated with cancer and cancer treatments. But these are all accessible, easy to use, and perhaps already in your treatment plans and easy to get. I use ashwagandha extensively. That's Withania somanifera. And that is an Ayurvedic herb that is in the category traditionally of adaptogenic tonics in the Ayurvedic materia medica. It also has been shown to have some anti-tumor effects. And so I will put it in formulas, not only because I think it's important to use adaptogens to help patients deal with the known stress of going through the experience, but also to help them be more resilient. And so I look at adaptogenic herbs and the great tonics of Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine that include the medicinal mushrooms, but also ashwagandha is sort of the ginseng of Ayurvedic medicine. And I also look at herbs like that as food, as very, very nourishing. And because they're just full of nutrients and phytochemicals in higher amounts than exist in food plants, but also unique phytochemicals that don't exist in food plants, which makes them medicine. And I typically use something like that at 2 or 3 grams a day in my practice. So I'm excited about your study, Stacey. That's fabulous. Does anybody else have a comment or a question? Okay, I will go on because we had a case study from one of my dear friends and colleagues, medical doctor, Dr. Shiroko Sokic, who practices in Santa Rosa, which is just north of the San Francisco Bay Area. She's a medical doctor who practices functional medicine and Chinese medicine. And if anybody's going to the IFM conference, she's going to be there and I'm going to be there. She's presenting a poster on pain and acupuncture. So she presented a patient who is a newly diagnosed patient. She's a Latina. She's 37 years old and she was just diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And she's in a wait and watch mode with her oncologist. And Dr. Scirocco wants to know how best to assess her and what kind of slow down the progression health plan can be given to her. At the time of diagnosis, her white blood cells were 23,000. And so for those of you that don't have a lot of cancer patients, that, you know, see white cells at some unreasonable amount, they either have an infection or they have leukemia typically, or some kind of white cell disorder, mast cell disorders usually. So Scirocco didn't present a whole treatment plan. I don't have any medical records or labs on her. So she just gave a little bit. She's focused so far on lifestyle and diet and self-care and looking at a more plant-based diet for this patient. So I did a whole document case study on this patient with the information I had. So I'll review that with you here, and then you'll have it as a reference if you have a patient with this diagnosis come into your practice. So I put in the library that we have on the site a reference paper on CLL so that you can really understand the physiology of it. And also there's a link I put there for, it's called an expert guidance for treatment selection. And it's a little algorithm where you can put in data that you have on the patient, and it helps to determine what kind of treatment plan and agents you would use in that patient. It's basically a treatment planning tool. So that if you go there, you can see the kind of thinking that's involved in conventional oncology and deciding where the patient is on the continuum and what kind of interventions might be thought about. So I've given you the link for that. And there's also a really nice link from the cancer.org site that just also gives you an overview of the physiology of this particular leukemia. So her biomarkers, what I do have, what I wish I had, Scirocco asked what to monitor long-term. So you're going to always be looking at the CBC and the differential and tracking the lymphocytes, and you're going to track the leukocyte levels, and you're going to track the lymphocyte to neutrophil ratio. And that will always be skewed in these patients. But what you'll also see as the bone marrow gets crowded, you'll also see a decrease in hemoglobin and hematocrit and platelets, and then these patients become really tired, not only from the high inflammation, but from being short on red blood cells, and then they often start to bruise as well because they short on platelets. So as the ratios of cells in the bone marrow shift pathologically, we crowd out other cell populations that are really important. I also watch LDH because that quite often increases in these patients, lactic acid dehydrogenase. And these patients can have changes in their kidney function and liver function. Because there are viral connections to the leukemias, I also monitor vitamin A and zinc and look at viral titers. You want to watch inflammation markers like highly sensitive CRP. And also I watch interleukin-6 in these patients. Both LabCorp and Quest will do that. But really these patients just start to get really tired. And an early symptom and a persistent symptom can be fever, chills, night sweats. They definitely have lymphadenopathy. If you're palpating a patient and they have abnormal lymphadenopathy, just send them to be assessed. I have a current patient right now who went to 3 different naturopaths who tried to give her lymphatic drainage and did not assess her properly. And I was there, this patient's in San Diego, and the family called me and I said, "You need to be in the hospital." And so she had so much tumor mass that she couldn't open her mouth, and the tumor mass was pressing on her trigeminal nerve. And she was a lymphoma patient, not a leukemia patient. But, you know, my point is, don't mess around with these patients, because you've seen a chain of lymph nodes. you don't give them red clover. Go send them to be assessed so that you identify or rule out a serious pathology, because some of these hematologic cancers just are like wildfire. And this woman turned out to have advanced stage 4 cancer. And I told her to go to the hospital, where they did treat her with high dose chemotherapy to shrink that tumor off her trigeminal nerve and allow her to be able to move her mouth and eat. So she waited way too long, and she was treated by 3 different naturopaths who were irresponsible, I think, or just didn't know enough. So if you don't know, make sure you send the patient for an assessment. So you want to just watch for those symptoms. If a patient is complaining to you also of persistent fevers and chills and night sweats, they could have a hematologic cancer. So again, you want to properly assess them and make sure they don't have something serious. Of course, they could have a chronic infection, but they really need to be worked up properly to keep them safe, really. Now, there are a lot of botanicals and nutraceuticals for the leukemias and lymphomas. And in modern China today, there's the primary therapy. The first step is Chinese herbs in oncology settings, and especially for the wait and watch patients. And there's lots and lots and lots of traditional formulas. And I actually have put that there's 2 wonderful resources that I put in the references for you. One of them is called The Effectiveness of Traditional Chinese Medicine Treating Patients with Leukemia, and the second paper, Integration of Chinese Herbal Medicine Therapy Improves Survival of Patients with Chronic Lymphocytic Leukemia. And these were done in Taiwan. And one of the papers is, they're both 2016, and really interesting. And if you start to look at papers like this, you'll see this overlap in the herbs that are used in Asia in the leukemias. And so I've, in the handout for this case study, I've given you an example of a botanical formula that I might compound in my clinic for the patient. I've given you an example of a formula you can buy from health concerns called Enhance, which has a lot of the herbs that are active in the leukemias. And so if you don't have an herbal pharmacy, or you want to, you know, start with something that's already manufactured, that's an option. Also, if you suspect there's viral involvement and you can do viral titers, a lot of these patients have elevated titers of Epstein-Barr virus, but there's different viruses can be linked with different cancers. For example, the HPV virus we know is linked to head and neck cancer as well as cervical cancer. So we have a good materia medica for antiviral therapy. I like to use monolaurin, olive leaf, cat's claw. I'll always put vitamin A and zinc. Astragalus root is used in natural medicine for increasing white cells. So I'm very conservative in any patient who has leukemia and already has elevated white cell counts. What's really interesting is one of these papers states that astragalus does not make leukemia worse, but they haven't studied thousands and thousands of patients. And so I'm very conservative. I actually keep astragalus out of the treatment plans of these patients. And I also keep most of the Chinese and Asian mushrooms out because of their capacity to ramp up white cells, with the exception of Ganoderma, which is also so anti-inflammatory that it doesn't seem to do that. And if you're just looking for a medicinal mushroom that is antiviral, Coriolis is one of the more antiviral, like you can use that for patients with herpes viruses. But the main nutrients I use for viral control are monolaurin, olive leaf, cat's claw, vitamin A, zinc, and of course, vitamin C. And if they don't have leukemia, you can think about astragalus as well. But you'll actually see astragalus in a lot of traditional and modern leukemia formulas in China. So I've given you also in this custom compounded botanical formula that I wrote, you'll see that there are also antiviral herbs in there, which include isatis and andrographis, which are Chinese herbs that are very, very potent antivirals. So I will often put those in, but they're hard on the digestive tract. They're very bitter, but they're very, very powerful. And I've also put in this formula Lonicera, which is honeysuckle, which is used in the famous formula Yin Chao. It's one of the famous cold and flu formulas in Chinese medicine. It's mild, but it also is cooling. And so these patients have sweats and fevers. So think about using cooling herbs if you're writing formulas yourself. And I often tell these patients to stay away from hot, spicy foods as well for that same reason. Now, the foundation supplements that I would think about for a patient like this, there's a very nice formulation called Mitochondrial Energy that Designs for Health makes, but there's other mitochondrial support formulas that are similar in Orthomolecular and Thorn and Metagenics. So you can find this type of formula that really supports mitochondrial function. And then we have our, you know, a really foundation of the Outsmart Cancer system. We put in vitamin D, vitamin C. I always put extra magnesium in my patients' formulas to support mitochondrial function, and especially if they're on something that depletes magnesium, like the platinum drugs. Because of this woman's age, I put in some bone minerals for her, and she, I believe Shiroko said she was iron deficient, so I put in a very low dose of iron, because remember that iron can promote cancer, but we want to keep iron at least in the low normal quartile for a patient. And then I use a lot of omega-3 fatty acids in these patients, because the fatigue that goes with the leukemia is very inflammation related, and I always put in probiotics. And for this woman, I also put in a prebiotic. There's a new product by Designs for Health called Prebiomed XOS, which is a nice 1 month. You can do that for a month and really make the microbiome a place where the healthy bacteria can colonize. So that's kind of the basic foundation supplements. And then the more targeted things, think about antivirals like zinc and vitamin A that we just mentioned. There's some studies on grapeseed extract and leukemias, so we can put that in. And then I'll put in curcumin and EGCG into a formula like this. There are some studies on hinokiol, which is one of my favorite phytochemicals, but there are some studies on hinokiol and leukemia. And then because of the high oxidative stress that goes with the leukemias, I also would give her some liposomal glutathione. At bedtime, I like to give an extra dose of hinokiol so we can get more in. You can't give a lot of it at once because it upsets the gut. But it's also a nice sedative, and it's traditional use of magnolia bark high in hinokiol, which is its source, is very sedative. And you'll see hinokiol or magnolia bark in stress formulas or insomnia formulas. And then because also of the high oxidative stress, I'll put in 10 to 20 milligrams of melatonin at night. So that's kind of the basic strategy of really, really supporting all the elevated nutritional needs, managing inflammation, having something antiviral, and something that we have studies that shows reduces proliferation of leukemias. So that's your basic. And then the basic treatment principles are: make sure you're supporting inflammation control, make sure you're going to quench oxidative stress. You want to support immune function without ramping up the white cells, and you want to promote apoptosis and decrease proliferation. And so that this is a treatment plan that addresses all of those things. From the point of view of Chinese medicine, you want to support the kidney qi, nourish the yin, move stagnant phlegm, and move stasis in the middle jowl, because one of the symptoms is splenomegaly in many of these patients as the disease progresses, or at the time of diagnosis, sometimes that's one of the presenting symptoms. I've also given you a couple of formulas to look at, but I made a summary at the end of this with the core nutraceuticals to think about. Those are the green tea, catechins like EGCG, curcumin, the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, melatonin. Make sure those are in your plan if you have to choose. And then I also gave you a summary on the last page of this case study of the herbs that were in these two reference articles that I mentioned at the beginning. So you can see the main herbs that are used in modern leukemia formulas in Taiwan today. And in modern Taiwan, the use of Chinese herbal medicines, they do a lot of research there and they use a lot of herbal medicines right alongside conventional allopathic medicine. And so this is not old formulas. This is modern use of Chinese herbs. But you'll see there's a couple of herbs that overlap in these formulas. One of those is salvia miltiariza, danshan, which is one of my favorite herbs, anti-inflammatory, antioxidative stress, inhibits blood clotting, promotes apoptosis, reduces proliferation. That's one of my favorite. You'll see Scutellaria bicolensis, one of the main herbs in Armenteria medica. Most cancer formulas in modern China will have this herb. And also widely used is an herb I don't think I've talked about very much is Hedotis, H-E-D-Y-O-T-I-S, Hedotis diffusa, also known as Oldenlandia. And I use that quite a lot. It's very anti-inflammatory, and it's also really anti-proliferation. And you'll see it in really large amounts in a lot of anti-tumor formulas and also in the leukemias and lymphoma formulas in the modern Chinese materia medica. So you'll see that if you look at these formulas and your interest in Chinese herbs. So I will stop there, and then anyone who would like to ask questions about this case or share a case they had of a leukemia or a CLL patient in particular. There are good tyrosine kinase inhibitors now for the leukemias, and in most physicians will wait until the patient really needs a drug. And so what we can do is extend that time. Because this is a chronic leukemia and the patient might live a long time, but we want them to feel better and we want to slow down the progression. So anyone who would like to comment can unmute themselves by pressing *7 and chime in. Nobody. Okay, I will move on then. I have a resource for you in this lecture that it's actually at the end of the notes, but I want to make sure you all go and see it. There is a site called KNOW, K-N-O-W, which stands for Knowledge of Naturopathic Oncology. KNOWOncology.org is the URL, K-N-O-W Oncology.org. And this is a clinical educational tool that provides summaries of up-to-date research in integrative oncology. And it's a really great, great site. So I wanted you to know about that. And for those of you also that don't know about TAP Integrative, T-A-P, integrative.org, that's a site which is an educational site for naturopaths that has leading-edge doctors that discuss complex cases, discuss many different syndromes. I've done a couple of presentations for them on cancer and complex cancer patients. It's a really wonderful site. And as a member of my community, you get a discount. I think the yearly prescription is $150 and you get it for $99 if you're part of my community. So I want you to know about that. I also gave you a couple of papers on melatonin, and one of them was just a cell study that asked if the pro-oxidant effects of melatonin in high doses are actually what make it cytotoxic. But it was done in leukemia cells, but it was done in cells in a dish. And I don't know that we can get blood levels of melatonin high enough to be pro-oxidative with oral dosing. But I also have another really wonderful study that is titled, where is the first page of that? Does melatonin have utility in the treatment of hematologic neoplasms? And this is an interesting paper, and it shows, and it's a review paper, and it's from this year, or rather last year, 2018, in the British Journal of Pharmacology, and it shows that melatonin is really has low toxicity. It's very protective, and this is just looking at hematologic neoplasms, and that it really inhibits some of the carcinogenesis of these types of cancers, promotes apoptosis, is anti-proliferative and immune modulatory, and I mentioned earlier that it protects the blood-brain barrier as a neural antioxidant. And so this study looked at the use of melatonin in combination with other drugs, other standard of care drugs, to improve outcomes and efficacy of treatment. And it's a great paper, and it's fairly recent. And it showed that patients just did better. And then I have another study that is on the use of indole-3-carbinol in EGCG in patients, and the whether or not it improves overall survival and progression-free survival. And so you'll see if you take a look at that, it had five different arms to the study. And the first arm was with just adding indole-3-carbinol to standard of care. The second, these are ovarian cancer patients, by the way, advanced ovarian cancer patients. The second arm was using both indole-3-carbinol and EGCG and including long-term chemotherapy. That's the group that did the best. And then there were a couple of other cohorts. So one was without long-term chemotherapy and one was with. So the long-term chemotherapy with advanced ovarian cancer patients extends life. I think that's just standard, at least here in California. That's how it's practiced. But what's really interesting about progression-free survival, that the amount of time was doubled by 2 years. So the patients that had indole-3-carbinol, only 200 milligrams a day, and EGCG, only 200 milligrams a day, and the long-term chemotherapy had over 4 years, 4.5 years of progression-free survival versus 22 months, so less than 2 years. So that's significant. And in terms of overall survival, there was a difference of 15 months and the same groups. I have put a note in my comments here about this study that I would just use higher doses, which I usually do. I'd use indole-3-carbinol, which is a sulforaphane, at 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day, and the EGCG and 1,000 to 4,000 milligrams a day. And I think you see even better results. So, you know, ovarian cancer is an endlessly recurring cancer. And so it's very hard on women. But, you know, you can help women live a long time with a good quality of life. And so, and perhaps have them be able to do lower doses of their chemo if you have a oncologist who is willing to negotiate that. But this is a pretty impressive study. And so I put that in here for you because using sulforaphanes and using EGCG is part of our core toolbox. Remember that the sulforaphanes interfere with cancer cells at every stage of development, and so they're very powerful and interact with multiple pathways and parts of the cancer physiology. All right, so that brings us to the end of my content. So if anyone has questions about your patients, anything you need guidance with, or have other questions or comments, you can press star 7 and chime in. Well, I guess not. Okay, everyone. Thank you for your attention and your presence. Remember that all of the notes and slides and references will be uploaded to the library, and I'll see you next month. Thank you, everyone. Good night.